It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Yo siempre apuesto a mí, tú vives hablando de mí, te mueres si te frenara.
Y entonces,
¿cómo te quedó la cara?
No me hablé de vaina rara.
Y yo no tengo para.
¿Cómo gané? Si ya hablan de mí, eso que me importa a mí, siempre ando con vaina cara.
Si yo siempre apuesto a mí, tú vives hablando de mí, te mueres si te frenara.
Host John Troopin, joined today, as just about always, by Kate Prusser and Joe Doyle, here to do a little rookie roundup on the 2020 Mariners at the same time that we're watching the a fall frenzy, I believe, is what MLB is rolling with for this 8-game March Madness style. Wednesday of baseball.
Wild.
Fun.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Are you guys, I mean, obviously I think we've got some hesitations on the format as a whole, but are you enjoying at least just this specific moment of it?
I am. It does kind of remind me of March Madness. There's games going on all over the place. Atlanta and Cincinnati have decided they're going to play for 3 days.
Yep.
So they're going to play through the whole schedule. But I think it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun to see everybody's attention focused towards baseball, because baseball didn't even have all the attention during their season because it was basketball. So now we've gone on to football, but they've, you know, cleverly picked the one day of the week football is not being played to hit us up with this huge schedule. So I think it's fun. I don't know that the quality of the games is what I would consider, like, playoff caliber baseball. I was looking at a lot of these games and thinking, like, I don't think the Mariners are that. The 2020 Mariners are that far off of a lot of these teams. But some pretty weak offensive showings so far.
Yeah, I think that's actually a very interesting point, because I think you're absolutely right. Like, the Mariners, I mean, legitimately were not only in terms of quality, but in terms of record, they were not that far off of you know, sneaking in here. You know, they ended up 27-33. The Astros ended up sneaking in at 29-31. And you know, a lot of that was predicated on pretty impressive and sort of surprising steps from a lot of their young players. So that's where we're going to start here today. We got a few questions that we're going to talk about broader, including talking about the recently announced, what do they call it? The Player Development Fall Instructional League? It's like a...
Yeah, they're not... They're very decidedly not going with Instructional League, which I think is good because it's insulting to send a guy like Jack Anderson, let alone, I mean, Joe Rizzo, Wyatt Mills. Like, it's insulting to send them to something called Instructional League. So I think they're going with Fall Development League, which is euphemistic, but whatever.
Yeah, it's not the Arizona Fall League. It's not the, yeah, it's a weird sort of in-between land. But yeah, so we can talk a little bit about that roster as well. But I want to first just, as before we sort of fully engross ourselves in the playoffs and the offseason, just do a little sort of up-down on you know, where players are this moment in time versus where we were about those players at the start of this season. And you can consider that in March, you can consider that July, just generally, you know, whether these players have progressed, regressed, whether you think they have more they can add, just sort of a stock check, if you will. So let's start with the good, probably the best, and that's Kyle Lewis, who most likely will be adding the Rookie of the Year award. Kind of limped into it a bit at the end, but you know, limped more rapidly than Luis Robert, which is how you can win an award, I suppose. If you just walk enough, you don't, your numbers don't fall off quite as much. So, you know, how do you guys feel about Kyle Lewis, you know, at this point and going forward? Do you think you prorate kind of what he did this year, and that's a reasonable expectation for him going forward?
It's weird. I feel exactly how I did at the beginning of the season, right now, like the same right now as I did at the beginning of the season. If you would have told me at the beginning of the season that he was going to be like a 240, 245 hitter with, you know, above average power, someone that runs into 10 to 12 home runs over 60 games, I would have said, yeah, that feels about right. And a, you know, 28 to 30% K rate, yeah, that feels about right. I think more than anything, I feel really good about how he can contribute in the future in the outfield, whether that be in a corner or in center. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a little frustrating because I think by the end of the year, Lewis kind of regressed back into his scouting report slot. And that's a guy that's, you know, probably a 45 hit tool, 50 hit tool with, you know, above average power. And that's fine. Like, that's good. I do want to see him kind of develop an identity next year, because it seemed as though at the beginning of the year, he was somewhere in between like a really, really mature hitter that would go with breaking stuff the other way. And, you know, because of it, his exit velos, you know, were sacrificed a little bit. And then midway through, he just started pummeling the ball. And now at the end of the year, he's striking out a whole bunch. So for me personally, and this might not be how everybody feels, I still don't think we have any idea what Kyle Lewis is going to be as a pro. So I'll be watching that next year.
I wanted to say, Greg Johns ran a poll that I thought was really interesting. In a season filled with youthful progress, which Mariners player took the most impressive step forward in 2020? And the options were J.P. Crawford, Kyle Lewis, Dylan Moore, and Justice Sheffield. And obviously, Kyle Lewis won the poll with 43.3%. I was wondering if you guys agreed with that, because I actually would not have picked Lewis in that group.
I voted Dylan. I saw that. I voted Dylan Moore.
Because?
I voted Dylan Moore because I felt like as a player, as someone that was trying to develop, like grow their ability on the field, Dylan Moore got better on defense, in my opinion. He was good the year before, but he played all over the diamond, and mm-hmm. I never mentioned his name. I thought he was great. He was hitting the ball harder. He wasn't striking out as much. He was, you know, getting into a power stroke. He stole like 10 bases. I just thought Dylan Moore developed and grew into this well-rounded player that still might not be in a like a full-time regular, but he might legitimately be one of the better super utility guys in the league next year. And for me, that was just a greater development toward the future.
Yeah, I think that Sheffield was my answer, just because of him sort of establishing himself in a way that it was very on the fence about whether he could be something or not. And with Lewis, one, I don't know quite how much he established himself by the end. I think he really made himself someone the Mariners should try and plan around, but they have so much outfield depth already that Sheffield, it was a little bit more of an immediate need, and I think he really locked that up much more than I expected, and that was really encouraging.
I also went with Sheffield because I thought he just showed to me the greatest degree of consistency. Like, he had that rough mm-hmm. start kind of against the Angels. He had like the weird home road splits. But by the end of the season, I really thought he had just kind of relaxed into the player he is. Like, he is not a strikeout pitcher, but he is a weak contact pitcher. I thought the changeup really came along in a pleasant and surprising way. I think that even has further to go, but it was nice to see him utilizing it. The command issue, which I was so worried about, really doesn't seem to be as much of a problem, especially going on through the season. So I feel like Justice Sheffield really evolved into the player who I think he is. Dylan Moore is a good answer too, Joe. I didn't consider him maybe as heavily as I should have, because you're right. Like, for all the hand-wringing about Chris Taylor going away and becoming Chris Taylor for the Dodgers, you know, thanks in no small part to the resources that the Dodgers have, I feel like Dylan Moore is like the Mariners' version of Chris Taylor. He's that super utility, like you said, and he really fixed his swing profile where the mm-hmm. strikeouts were concerning, and just that one small fix has made him into, I think, an incredibly valuable player. I really enjoy watching him run the bases. I think he's smart. You know, he has good baseball instincts. Like, there's a real, like, I was only half joking when I said I thought that if there was an All-Star game, then Dylan Moore would have been the Mariners' representative, because I just think he adds so much to the team.
Yeah. As far as Justice Sheffield definitely would have been my second vote. The one thing that I really enjoyed about Sheffield is, yeah, the changeup got markedly better as the season went on. But I think you might recall at the beginning of the year when he was throwing that two-seam, he ditched the four-seam for the two-seam. It was like 89 to 91, like in spring and the first couple starts of the year. And we were all like, this is not, like, this won't work. This guy's got to throw something firmer. And by the end of the year, the two-seamer was like 91, 94. I think it hit a 95 at the end of the year with some good tail on it. And I mean, that works, you know, that's a totally different pitcher. So yeah, I think Justice would definitely be my second place vote. But I think what this poll really shows is, like, Dylan Moore got better in just about every category. Justice Sheffield, all of his pitches got better, including his command, in just about every category. And I think with Kyle Lewis, save his defense, we don't know if he got better with, you know, his contact. We don't know if his power got better than what we saw at the end of 2019. So while, yeah, he's going to win Rookie of the Year, and a lot of that is a byproduct of his power and just the sheer amount of at-bats that he got this year, I don't know if he necessarily, like, took the biggest step forward on the team. That's just my opinion.
I will say, I do think, you know, I agree that I don't know that he took the biggest step forward. I was like, I definitely saw new things from Kyle Lewis this year that I hadn't seen from him consistently before.
Yeah.
And you know, I think one of the things that was concerning was, and Joe, you wrote about this about midway through the season or a few weeks into the season of like, okay, he has, you know, sort of jumped on a few balls and then he's started driving opposite field, sort of singles and doubles, adjusting to the breaking balls he was getting a bunch. But then a little bit of concern, okay, is he still going to get to that power? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he ended the year with respectable but not eye-popping power numbers. But, like, so much of his offense was held up because, yes, he had a high BABIP, but it was also, you know, he hit a good amount of line drives. He sprayed the ball all over. So he was not really, like, easily shiftable.
Right.
He was still hitting, you know, he would have some weakly hit balls, but he barreled the ball up plenty. And he walked a ton. And you could say, like, maybe that was going to fall off a bit. But, like, him being a guy who walks comfortably double digits and has enough power to absolutely, you know, run into the ball plenty and still spray the ball, like, that is someone who you should feel comfortable starting and putting out there and could be a starter on a good team. And it, a year ago, I did not know if Kyle Lewis was going to be able to be a big leaguer, like, consistently. And now I feel like that is far more likely.
Yeah. The walks are great. It's just, he had such a strange year, like 11 home runs and three doubles. He would have averaged 8 doubles in an entire calendar year. Like, that's weird. Like, there's no way around it. That's just strange. So yeah, I wrote about him, like, going down and getting breaking balls and off-speed stuff and driving it up the middle and the other way. And, you know, I think my last paragraph in that article was, at some point pitchers are going to shift back and they're going to start throwing high heaters to Lewis after the, you know, fatigue of the Verlander home run kind of wears off from film. And I think that's where he really struggled. I mean, he really, really struggled with fastballs up and in towards the end of the year. And, you know, for a guy that has so much of his value planted within his power, that's going to be the biggest thing that I want to see him take a step forward on next year is if someone's, you know, trying to get you out by going up with heat, you know, go turn and burn on it. Do what you did with Verlander and don't guess slow stuff with two strike counts. You're smart enough, you're a mature enough hitter to react, sit fastball. That would be my only thing. More times than not, I would say.
So we talked about Sheffield a bit there. Let's talk about probably the most, well, I don't want to put words in Yale's mouth, but for me, the most disappointing rookie this year, which was Evan White. Absolutely delivered with the glove. You know, made the entire defense, certainly the infield, and better by his presence. You know, I think helped lift J.P. Crawford up in particular. But really, really, especially by the end of the year, just looked pretty thoroughly lost at the plate. I know I've seen, and I've done a little bit of like, well, he'll get better with more time. But like, did you guys see things that made you think Evan White is going to improve, you know, in his second bound of 200 plate appearances and, you know, in, and the, his first full year in the bigs?
I think it's hard to imagine him not improving. I mean, he's never been a, I don't mean that sarcastically. I don't mean that. I mean,
no, I got
this
you,
is rock absolutely. Bottom. No, I don't think he's never been this player. Like, he's always been an average hitter. He's always been maybe an above average hitter. I don't have any reason to believe this is going to be the Evan White that we settle into over the next 4 or 5 years. He had those interviews during summer camp where he was like, you know, I'm still trying to figure it out. My swing doesn't feel right. I think the entire season just caught him a little bit off guard when it revved back up so fast. And, you know, that's a lot coming from a guy that's going from AA right into the big leagues. You know, you kind of want to give him the smoothest transition you can. But yeah, I mean, he was swinging at fastballs at his eyes. He was swinging at curveballs that didn't make it to the home plate dirt. They hit the grass. It was a mess. But for everything that he did struggle with, I thought that he kind of in Zunino fashion kept his cool. He kept his leadership qualities about him on the field. He never let it get on defense. So yeah, you know, I said for the last 5 or 6 weeks, I'm really just excited for this kid to get some time off, reset, and enjoy another spring training where he can just settle in, rediscover who he is as a player, and he'll be all right. He was over swinging. He was doing a lot of things that just aren't Evan White. So it'll be very refreshing to see him get a blow.
Yeah, that's what I come back to is, like, I've been watching Evan White for years, and I've never seen him be this bad. Like, this is not who Evan White is. It's not who he's ever been through his career. Like, he's always been a little strikeout prone, but nothing like what, I mean, that is, it is discouraging to see him up there and see him be so lost. But it's also like, he's doing one of the hardest things you can possibly do in baseball, which is jump from double A to straight to, you know, seeing some of the best pitchers in the world. And he did have success at times. Like, I really got to go back to some of his Statcast info. Like, he hits the ball so hard, just so flipping hard. He gets so many barrels. His exit velocity is way up there. I mean, when he makes contact, he punishes the ball. It's just that contact issue and figuring out how he's being pitched to. And I just think not having any AAA and not having any opportunity to adjust to really quality breaking stuff was really hard for him. So I'm not at all panicked about Evan White. I'm disappointed his season didn't go better just for him, but mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not unhappy with what I saw, like, especially not with the defense at first base. I agree with John. If J.P. Crawford does win a gold glove, I think, like, a third of that belongs to Evan White, like, maybe the last two fingers or something, because he makes his defenders better, and I feel like that's gotta, like, lift him up too, as you can see how much they appreciate him. And I think especially Kyle Seager, even though Kyle Seager doesn't need it, imagine being Kyle Seager and throwing to the likes of Danny Valencia, Adam Lind, bless his heart, Daeho Lee. I mean, he's thrown to some terrible defenders over there, and now he's just got, like, a giant, I mean, he's like pitching a football into a soccer net. I mean, he can throw it anywhere. So I just feel like there's enough positives that hopefully, and White is a solid kid, and I don't think he'll get too wrapped around the axle about it. Hopefully the Mariners.
A great kid, I've heard.
A great kid. Yeah, man.
Fine young man.
So unnecessary. I know John Heyman loves picking on the Mariners for whatever reason, but so unnecessary. I did enjoy Hunter Bishop showing up in the reply saying, until you play, pipe down over there or whatever. Great. You know, and the fact that he has such strong defenders, people who come to his defense, is, you know, again, another testament of his character. He's really well-liked, even by opposing players. I mean, Colin Thoreau from the A's organization had so many nice things to say about him. And, you know, he's going to be fine. I think, for me, the most disappointing rookie performance is Dunn. I was disappointed in Justin Dunn's performance. I really, really had hoped he would show a little more consistency. I still believe I'm still probably the high one on staff on Justin Dunn, but it's I'm really worried about the command issue.
He's not looked like, you know, it's not like he was, I mean, LJ Newsome in his time with Arkansas, but he was not a big walks guy, and he was able to be sort of aggressive with his, aggressive with his fastball and use his breaking balls to get himself swings and misses. And I don't know. I mean, the curve has not looked distinctive, and the sliders look good, but he's really just, it's worrying because I can't tell if it's a mechanical issue or what, but he's not looked like the pitcher that we've seen
him be. He looks stiff to me.
Yeah.
The whole mechanism doesn't flow anymore. It's very rigid and wonky, and, you know, without getting too far down the rabbit hole, he just doesn't move like he seemingly used to. It doesn't look as easy for him. They kept talking about how good his fastball was, and that really interested me, because, you know, guys were hitting like 150 against his fastball or something like that. I'm just kind of pulling that out of thin air. I don't know what it ended up at, but guys were hitting like 150 off his fastball, and he gave up like one home run against his fastball. And, you know, the slider, I don't think, has been quite what we expected it to be. But, I mean, Kate, I know you're really high on him, but if the fastball is that good and he's supposedly the athlete that everyone says he is, I just don't see how Seattle doesn't move him to the bullpen if they sign a starter this offseason. I can't see him
I think it's more likely for him to go to AAA and work on some stuff there.
Just to keep him stretched out type of thing?
I think that you're right about the mechanics. Because he does look stiffer to me. And I wonder if that's just tension, like carrying tension in his body because of the stress and because he's knowing that he really, really needs to get that command under control. And then yet he's like flailing open, like he's flying open through his delivery. And I watched a lot of him in Arkansas. I didn't think he was as polished as Sheffield. I don't expect him to be as polished as Sheffield. I didn't expect him to do as well as Sheffield this year. He's behind him developmentally. He went to college. He went to Boston College, which I don't think is like, you know, they're good, but I don't think of that. It's not like going to an SEC school or something development wise. You know, he had some time with the Mets. Oh, I don't know how I feel about their pitching development. He comes over here. I just think he got a slower start to his career than Sheffield did, who was also being developed by the Yankees, which is one of the better development systems. So I don't hold them up against each other or compare them, and I really resist the, I know that they feel competitive with each other, and I really resist the media narrative to hold them up against each other, because I feel like that's ultimately damaging for Justin. But I saw him at AA. I thought he looked like a guy who really knew how to pitch and how to get guys out, and he was able to use his slider a lot more effectively. And he just looked nastier. He looked more in control. He looks tense and tentative on the mound to me. And I think things aren't going as well as he wants them to, and it's stressful. So I think a little bit of time in Tacoma, maybe some time resetting some of those mechanics and just doing the mental work on that side to be like, to get back to who he was at AA. So again, much like I don't think Evan White is, the version of Evan White we saw is not a version of Evan White I saw in the minors. This is not the version of Justin Dunn that he was at Arkansas. And so he's just got to figure out how to get back to, because when he's on, he has a swagger. He's He's a little nasty. He's got a little fire. Like, there was none of that on the mound this year. And I think he has to get back to that vision of himself in order to be really successful. I still believe in it because I don't think it's a talent thing. I think it's a mental thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Let's see. We got a few other here. Let's take as a package a couple outfielders. We've got Jake Fraley and Braden Bishop, both of whom I think were sort of we were thinking might get a more extended look this year. Fraley in particular was you know talked about as like, oh, we're gonna play Jake Fraley every day, you know, and I think he had was it a stomach issue during summer camp, and then ended up missing a
little
bit of time.
Didn't he?
Yeah,
and he lost a bunch of weight.
Yeah, and you know, understandably, they took it slow with him getting back, but eventually came up, and then struggled a bit, and then got hurt again, and then came back, got, yeah, just, I mean, really just a halting season for Fraley. And for Bishop, you know, it was kind of, you know, the same sort of thing of, yep, he seems like he's dominating the minors, but he's not necessarily getting much play in the bigs. I mean, do either of these guys factor into a starting, you know, the start of next season for the Mariners? For you guys, and I'm saying specifically the start because I think we all are expecting Jared Kelnick not to break camp with the team.
Yeah, if they've held him down for this long, like they'll do whatever it takes to get that extra year of control, I guess, which is gross. But moving on, I was very encouraged to see Braden Bishop hit some balls hard in that last series. Was it against Oakland? He was finally getting to play some.
Yeah,
he had a few over 100 miles an hour, which was great to see because, first of all, he was hitting the ball. I think that's the best I've ever seen Braden Bishop look as a pro. I'm really mad that they're not giving him some run. I wish that they would just trade him if they're going to, like, not give him a chance to play ever. Because I think, you know, he needs playing time. He needs reps, and he's just had so many fits and starts. And part of that, too, is him just getting absolutely so unlucky with the injuries. I mean, he could have died from that lacerated spleen. That is terrifying.
Was
so,
that in 2018?
That was, yeah. No.
That was last year.
That was 2019.
2018, he had the broken forearm right at the end of the minor league season.
When he could have gotten called up. And then 2019, he finally did, and he got the lacerated spleen. So, yeah, I don't know what karmically is out to get Braden Bishop, but I will, like, I don't know, burn some sage for him or something. So, yeah, I would really like to see them give him some regular run. I think Jake Fraley would have been a good trade candidate, except he couldn't stay on the field either. And when he was up, he was not looking great. Don't know what's going wrong there. The Haniger Light prediction that John made early on in that trade is not looking so good.
Yeah, John.
John was so excited about Jake Fraley and.
We've gotten the like weird series of injuries part of the Haniger. We have not gotten the still
Fraley's
like
the all-star thing.
Player.
Fraley's been bad, but the real problem here is John.
And I feel like it.
I mean, I would rather see Bishop over Fraley. I think they'll probably give Fraley chances. Who knows? If you're not going to play Braden Bishop, trade Braden Bishop. That's all I have to say about that. A lot of teams could use a defensively plus center fielder.
I have no idea why. I've spewed this over the internet for weeks.
Talk to you about your internet spewing, Joe.
It's been just a lot of spewage. I don't know why Braden Bishop.
Philip Irvin! Sorry,
I just understand.
Had to get that off my chest.
I'll give you Philip Irvin.
No, don't give him to me. I don't want him. Take him back.
I will lend you Philip Irvin. I don't understand why Jose Marmolejos was playing the field. There's an open DH spot. Tim Lopes was DHing with Marmolejos in the field. And granted, when you put Tim Lopes out there, no offense to Tim Lopes, it wasn't much better. So, apparently Braden Bishop had 5 home runs in Tacoma at the alternate site. Why, you know, you drafted this guy. You developed this guy. He is the definition of a success story or a potential success story for your organization. He's a local kid. And I'm not a Husky. And he's a local kid. Why is he not playing? It doesn't make any sense to me.
And I know that this shouldn't impact playing time, but I don't know. I mean, if you're not going to do it in 2020, when are you going to do it? But, like, he's an outspoken advocate of his black teammates.
Everyone loves him.
Everyone loves him. Like, he is...
He's the clubhouse barber.
Yes, he is. I mean, he has so much value that is not tied to what he does on the field, even. And I mean, I just
feel
like...
And also, he's 27.
Yeah, he's not a young guy anymore.
No, let him play.
This Free is not, Braden Bishop.
This is not Boog Powell, you know? This is
All right. What we're not going to do is talk any shit on Boog Powell.
I'm not talking. Okay. No, I'm just saying, like, Boog Powell got moved and never really got his shot. But he was like 25 when he got moved. Like, if you're moving Braden now, he's going to be 27, 28 years old. Like, I don't know. Give this guy a shot.
He's a year away from becoming like a minor league free agent, and then the Mariners will sign him because then he'll be interesting. As a minor league free agent, but as like a player they have. So they first have to let him become Dylan Moore, and then they'll be interested and bring him back.
It's frustrating when the last 3 weeks of the year, you know, Mike Blowers pulls up the lineup screen and there's 4 guys at the bottom batting 170, and somehow Braden Bishop is not with the team. Like, I just, that was my biggest takeaway over the last month of the season is, why is this guy not, you know, doing his young pitchers a favor and playing left field? But I digress. Anyways, I think he should be the 4th outfielder next year at the beginning of the year.
Absolutely. Let's go quick fire through a few of the other pitchers here. Couple bullpen names, or sort of bullpen filler kind of names. We saw a debut from Joey Gerber. We saw a debut from Johan Ramirez. We saw a debut from Aaron Fletcher. Are those guys people that you think the team should be... I mean, not like they're just going to cut bait on anyone, but, you know, did you see enough from those three to feel like there was something more there? Was there someone who was more discouraging or more encouraging there?
I think Johan is clearly the best arm. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, yeah. Maybe I'm wrong, but dude was striking out people like crazy. And it's clear the team got more confidence in him as the season went by, throwing him out there at any point after sitting him. I think they sat him for like 10 days in a row in the first couple weeks of the year. So I think he's certainly going to be a guy that the team leans on. For me personally, Gerber is going to have to get back to getting the life on his fastball, because he was like 92 to 94 and it didn't have any life. He wasn't as good as I was expecting him to be out of the gate. So I hope he gets back to the stuff that we saw out of AA. I'm just going to give Aaron Fletcher a pass because I don't know what was going on there. I think he's clearly a better pitcher than what we saw. And I mean, LJ was what we thought he was going to be, right? I mean, he's a fun, you know, quad A guy that can make spot starts. That's a valuable piece.
Yeah, LJ was a little worse than I was hoping for. Maybe that's just an adjustment thing and he'll bounce back. But it was disappointing to see. Like, I think he maybe just needs, like, one more pitch or some refinement on one of was it the changeup that was looking so bad?
The slider.
The slider, yeah. It was...
They were both They were both not,
they were both rough.
Yeah, they were both
the bad. The changeup had some, like, okay, but it was not like a real swing and miss pitch.
Yeah.
And that, it had to be because the slider was so bad, and yeah, it's not that.
Yeah, and we were told he was working on a cutter at Tacoma. I failed to see the cutter, so we'll give that. The best I can do for him is an incomplete grade. Same with Fletcher. I don't know what went wrong with that, but I'm just going to not dwell on that. I agree that I was disappointed about with Gerber's lack of swing and miss stuff. I don't think that the deceptive windup fools as many major league hitters as we were maybe hoping it would. So the stuff itself is going to have to do the talking. And Johan, I love Johan. I love him as a person. I love his pogoing off the mound when he gets a strikeout. I love him so much. I love how much he seems to love baseball and his passion for the game and how invested he was in a season where at times it was hard to be invested as a fan, but I always cared when he came on. I really, really, really hope they can help him figure out the command stuff because his walk rate is atrocious. I mean, he walks as many guys as he strikes out, and you can't do that.
I gotta pull up his. I gotta pull up his stats because he, if I remember correctly, had like one of the most insane FIP to ERA splits that I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, just, I mean, that happens when you strike out seven batters and walk seven batters, or whatever.
I believe
the
he also
are.
Stranded a cool 93.8%, which is a he great
got
look.
So lucky sometimes, yeah, with. Yeah. And, you know, bailed out by his defense a couple of times. I still remember that pop out in one of the games. Maybe it was against the Padres. I can't remember. But he was in some big trouble. I believe he had loaded the bases and was going to have the save slash win slip away. And he got a pop out and he went charging off the mound to go, like he was going to go catch it himself. And Kyle Seager was no.
I think that was in Houston.
Was that it? I recapped it, but I can't totally remember what it was.
Check out these splits. So a 6.05 FIP, which is really bad.
Awful.
A 6.77 XFIP, which is markedly worse. His ERA was 2.6. The average exit velo was 87. He only had a ground ball rate of 13%. But he K'd 11.3 per inning and walked almost a batter in inning. I mean, just the weirdest year. It's just all or nothing.
Yes, that is very much how I would describe Johan Ramirez.
Well, and I think the big thing was, right, this was the hardest year. He had to get through this year.
Yes.
And now he can be in the bigs if the M's decide that. But now the M's can also, like, say, all right, like, Johan, you're going to go to Tacoma. You're going to, like, we're going to work on some specific things here. Like, it's going to be, we know you have the stuff. Now we want you to tweak this. Now we want you to, you know, can you work on this? And, like, now he can be in the minors and get a little bit more, like, low-intensity stuff
get
with
coaching.
The knowledge of, like, Once you get these things refined, you're going to be right back up here, and you're going to be helping this team. So I mean, that's like the rate of just like straight up return a guy on Rule Fives is pretty high. So even this is already
right. What a great year to have a Rule Five too, when you only have to carry him for 60
absolutely.
Games. I wish we had filled up on more Rule Five guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This guy is, I think, a definite. He's a better arm than what they got in Brandon Brennan. But I mean, a 2.6 ERA, 11.3 strikeouts per nine, and he still managed a negative 0.2 F war. So just like the strangest line ever. But I really like him. Seattle's going to have a lot of fun with that, with what they could have in the bullpen next year. They're going to have like five guys throwing 97, 98.
Yeah. I mean, because you got Ramirez, you got Munoz should be back.
Graveman, I'm sure will be back.
Yeah. And then, I mean, if Gerson Bautista is able to figure out his breaking ball, that's something. You know, it's good to have Gerson Bautista can have the Dan Altavilla Memorial. If he only figures out the slider, then, he's throwing 98. It must work. Surely it will work, role. But... No, I and Hirson actually looked pretty even more interesting. Like he had made some tweaks in spring training. Obviously, it was sort of hard to tell in depth, but spring training 1.0. So yeah, I think that is an interesting group. The last person I want to touch on, then we'll do some listener questions here real quick. What are you guys thinking about Nick Margavichus going forward? Were you encouraged enough to say, all right, there's six rotation spots next year. One of those should be for Nick Margavichus. Or do you think, he's the first guy out?
I don't know if he's necessarily the first guy out, but I think he fits that role of the guy that you keep stretched out and you throw in the bullpen and you put him out there in a blow-up game, or you put him out there in a bullpen day, or if someone goes down with an injury, you slot him back into the rotation. But I think in a perfect world, he's probably not in Jerry's top five or even top six come like next, July 1st maybe. I think he's a really good piece to have. I think he's a valuable piece to have, but I don't think he's I don't think you want him in your rotation if you're going to make a push for a World Series. I would say that he's probably like a role 45 guy, kind of a spot starter, long relief type of role. Well, just a bump up from LJ.
I was surprised at how much coverage Nicky Marge got in like in the graphics and stuff. It would be like Sheffield, Dunn, and Nick Margavichus. Like, what are you doing here? You're not a prospect.
Did you hear us talking about you?
It's like he just kind of snuck into the frame. But yeah, he got a lot of attention. They seem to like him. So I find his stuff just moderately okay. I mean, it works because he mixes his pitches and, he knows how to pitch. But I wonder if they feel like they can amp up something in his repertoire. They sure seem to like him. And I mean, he was pretty good for... I don't know that the Padres entirely know what they're doing with pitching development. Let's be honest about that. Like, anyone following what Chris Paddock has done so far in the... I believe he gave up four runs in the first... Yeah, Paddock is very perplexing to me because sometimes he'll be good and other times it just looks like everyone has him totally figured out. I have questions. So I don't know. Maybe there's something really interesting hiding in Nicky Marge that some better development can unlock. I thought he was great for 2020, though. Just me too. Exactly. Very consistent. Really enjoyed recapping his starts because I knew things wouldn't get out of control. I enjoy his stick-out ears so much. Like, he looks like Happy Baby New Year from Rudolph's Shiny New Year special, animation special. And I find that adorable.
It was deeply encouraging. And it's nice to have that guy, like the sort of fill-in guy, be a 24, 25-year-old, like, big lefty, as opposed to being, like, literally Tommy Malone. Like, it's just a lot more interesting and a lot more like, okay, maybe we got something here. So I appreciated that at the minimum, if nothing else.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right. Well,
before we do listener questions, can we just do a little bit on the Fall League?
Yes. So we got a decent question from Mariner's Luke, and I was just going to flow that right onto the overall. So Luke at Mariners underscore Luke on Twitter asked, how many games is this league, the developmental fall league? Will it be streamed anywhere? Are we going to see a pretty set lineup or pretty rotational so guys get even reps? And I can answer the first two real quick. 24 games. It's over 6 weeks. The PR release said what days the games were, but I can't remember specifically. And then it doesn't seem as though it'll be streamed anywhere. At least the Mariners are not allowing media, which sucks. They're also not allowing fans. Potentially. Yeah, I mean, this league, it's a four-team league that the Mariners, the Padres, the Rangers, and the Royals are orchestrating at their, the Mariners and the Padres share their spring training facility. The Rangers and the Royals share their spring training facility. So it's nearby and surprise. So they'll be headed there. However, I don't really know. I mean, on this list, and we don't have to read off the entire list, but were there some names in particular that stood out? My expectation would be a lot. It'll probably skew towards the older players playing more, and that a lot of the like younger guys, some of the like literally 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds are going to be there a little bit more for the like to be there for high performance camp and to like maybe have a few game reps, but mostly like get accustomed with some of the higher level players in the organization.
Yeah, the younger guys are definitely the ones I'm most intrigued by. Like Milcar Perez, I'm really excited to kind of see what they have in him, and George Feliz, I'm really excited to kind of see what he brings to the table. But Corey Brock wrote a really interesting, kind of article today on the Player Development Fall League, and he talked a little bit more about Juan Thén and how Juan Thén was, 97, 98, we had talked about that in Gas Camp pre-2019, and apparently at Tacoma he was averaging 96 with the fastball, which he's going to have to be added to the 40-man for the Rule 5 this year, assuming none of that gets changed. Would not stun me at all if we see Juan Thén in the bullpen for the Mariners next year. Not even a little bit.
Yeah, he's a guy who's been up mid upper 90s, and he's a smaller guy, which absolutely doesn't preclude people from starting anymore, and we're sort of seeing more and more of recognition that, smaller guys can absolutely be very effective starters, but it's still durability wise can be easier for sort of skinny, smaller guys to just go to the bullpen and let it rip, every other day.
I would love to see him. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not discounting his ability to be in the rotation.
No, I know.
For sure. That's just probably where they'll need him.
Right. Well, and it just makes sense just on that timeline.
Yeah.
If you need to keep him from getting Rule 5, you're going to have him on the 40-man anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, he can probably start in Modesto or maybe even Arkansas. But, you probably want him ready to try and come out of the bullpen at least on occasion.
Yeah.
How about you, Kate? Are there some names you're particularly excited to, see? Is not necessarily the right word. I don't know how much we'll actually see them.
Yeah, disappointing.
But maybe hear little bits and pieces about, and have some sort of actual interaction with.
I'm holding back on being excited until I see whether we get anything out of this or not. I'm hoping there will at least be like a couple of Instagrams or something. I mean, I'm sure the Mariners will probably send their own person down there. Like we said, it's hard to get anything substantive when it's being run by the PR arm of an organization, which is in a lot of ways, that's also kind of what we got out of Tacoma, I feel. So I'm trying to adjust my expectations. Like Joe, I'm really excited mostly to get any kind of inkling about the guys we just haven't seen, like Nathaniel Garabitos.
Oh, I forgot about your boy Garabitos.
Yes, Garabitos.
Fireball.
Rock me, Garabitos.
Nobody's safe in the stadium.
I'm excited to have like those guys. Obviously, we know my pet project favorite is Jonathan Classe, who I'm just excited about having him show up all just completely yoked and hopefully destroying some baseballs. So yeah, definitely those guys. Also like Michael Limoncelli and Levi Stout and guys who have been hurt. I'm really excited for them. Sam Carlson, really excited for them to get their careers kind of back on track. So that's what is most exciting. And in that way is even more exciting than a fall league would be, because otherwise these would just be, you know, they'd have these guys at the complex probably working out. They'd be doing their high-performance camp or whatever, but we wouldn't actually get to see them in game action. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, it is hard to get properly excited without knowing if we'll have really any access other than, like, a team report, internal report of them putting out whatever it is they want, which is, you know, kind of what we got from the alternate site for the most part, where it's like, this is not useful really in any way for us as like an external group to appraise what is happening.
Yeah. Highlight reels don't do it, man.
Exactly.
No. Can you imagine a highlight reel of like Carlos Baguero? People would think he's the greatest player.
Oh my God.
He did it again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we don't really have a great answer for Luke in terms of like how the lineups are going to break down, but it's like, you got to imagine it's not going to be like,
I think it'll be rotational.
Yeah, I think it'll be rotational. I do think it'll skew more heavily towards some of the older guys, because like, you're not going to you're not sending Taylor Trammell down there to like,
To lift.
Like, I think they have something specific. Like, Julio Rodriguez probably plays almost every day because they need to get him reps and he didn't get to play in the alternate site.
Yeah.
Dom Thompson-Williams probably plays a fair bit. Maybe plays some first base too. Who knows? Taylor Trammell, I think they have a specific thing that they are, like, trying to work with him adjustment-wise on. Like, because, like, otherwise, you know, guys had parts of 2 years in AA, like, and he would have been there again this year. Like,
yeah,
he's,
there's something, you know, there's something George Felice
is turned 18 a week ago and is never played a professional game. Like, same thing with Corniel, same thing with Cardozo. Like, that's not a super useful matchup if Taylor Trammell's just getting a bunch of reps against 17 and 18 year olds. So like, yeah, there's got to be something specific that they're going to try and rotate. And maybe that's even orchestrated with the other teams where it's like,
Okay,
we're going to have like shifts on, you know, now we're bringing in our B team, so you bring in your B team. So
yeah, but I'm sure it'll probably be like grouped into, like, you're not going to have the DSL guys. I bet all the DSL guys will kind of like play together. You're not going to run them out against like a team's top 40, you know, their top 100 prospect grouping. I mean, I guess you could, but I don't see how that would be helpful for anyone. So I'd like to analyze the other rosters, actually. I should do that. Sit down and look at like who the Rangers are inviting, who the Royals and Padres are inviting, and try to figure out some fits.
Yeah, I think that would be very interesting.
I also want to give a shout out to Jared Bayless, who is our podcast guest,
and friend of the pod.
Yeah, please go back and listen to that pod if you missed it. He has, if you like pitching, he has some really super smart things to say. I was really excited to see him get an invite to camp because, you know, he was kind of a late round pick. What does it say here? 33rd round selection in the 2019 draft. Youch. He got like
round
five
that probably won't exist.
Yes. He got like future. 5 innings or something in the AZL and maybe 10 in Tacoma Everett. So I didn't know if they were going to invest in him or not, and they are. So I'm really happy to see that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to a question from William Ash Redford IV, at Avery H. Pierce on Twitter. We talked a little bit about this. What are you hoping to see from Trammell? But also something I actually would love to hear from you guys. Besides Noel V. Marte, what infielders are you high on? And this can be in the performance camp, but I think also can really stretch throughout the organization. Are there infielders that you guys are particularly high on?
That is a good question. As far as I'm going to make my answer on Trammell really, really short. I don't really expect to see anything from him, like, at this instructional thing. Frankly, like, I think the instructional thing is really, really way more catered to just like that, just player development and not for the fans. I don't think it has anything to do with that. Like, I don't think we'll see very much. So I'll be basing my evaluations on Trammell in spring training and next season. But as far as what infielders I'm looking at, I already mentioned his name. I think Milcar Perez could be a pretty exciting player for the organization. He's a long ways away. I mean, he's like 2024 for sure. But he's kind of the guy I've got my eyes on. I think he's got a really big arm. And from everything that I've read, I haven't seen any video from him, but from everything that I've read, sounds like he's got a pretty good hit tool too. So I think he's going to be one to watch.
Yeah, I'm excited to get more. Like, literally, we have nothing on Milcar Perez. These are guys who were names on, like, a DSL roster. Like, very little. And the guys who are big Instagrammers will help us out with that. Like, they post stuff, but he is not one of them. So it's just very, have seen very, very little of Milcar Perez. So hopefully that will change. I like Patrick Frick. So he's
good one.
Yeah, he's just I think he's a little bit forgotten because he was a 2019 draftee and he played in Tacoma, or why do I keep calling it that? Everett. He played in Everett, which still exists for now. he played in Everett. He's just like a, you know, solid hit tool guy, solid walk to strikeout ratio, which, you know, I love a player with good plate discipline. So he's fun.
I want to add one really quick just because I totally forgot about him. I really liked what I saw from Caden Polkovich in the summer camp. I thought he didn't look like he was overmatched. He went up there fearless, made some really good swings on the ball. I don't know if he's a second baseman or a third baseman or a center fielder or where he's going to end up, but I don't know. I liked what I saw for a guy that was drafted, you know, 4 weeks before he was told he was going to be batting against Logan Gilbert.
Yeah, I thought even at the, when it was the whole team together and he was facing, like, the A team, like the Justice Sheffields and Justin Dunns, he really...
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, he looked
comfortable. He looked more comfortable than, like, Zach DeLoach, which,
yes,
you know.
Yes, I would definitely agree with
that. We barely saw it, but he looked comfortable.
Yeah, he's definitely got the attitude.
Yeah.
It's a tough group to be too excited about beyond those that you guys sort of addressed, just because, like, we've either spent a lot of time with them, like Joe Rizzo, and sort of have a reasonable, you know, there's not a ton they can necessarily prove here, or you know, like you guys said, like we're pretty unfamiliar with what changes they've made here. I am reasonably excited about Tyler Keenan, but you know, that hasn't really changed since the draft. That's just, you know, it's a big guy who can hit and who has enough power that can absolutely be a carrying tool. So we'll see. I mean, it really is still an organizational challenge, their sort of middle infield depth. So we'll see how that fills out in the sort of middle minors right now, because it's all pretty much on the 40 man other than Noel V in terms of up the middle, and Polkovich, I guess. Let's go to a question. We got a question from Aubr, AUBR, @AUBRRRRR.
Nice. RRR was taken. I get it.
Yeah, you know, it's tough sometimes. And it's a pretty simple one. No Kelnick. And this is in reference to the fact that, you know, this whole
evergreen
group...
question. Evergreen question.
I was going to say, yeah, it could be no Kelnick this year in the bigs, but it also could be no Kelnick here in the instructional camp. Due to the nature of the call for questions we put out, it is the latter. No Kelnick in this camp. Also no Logan Gilbert. No Brandon Williamson. No George Kirby. So some of sort of the top prospects outside of Julio Rodriguez and Taylor Trammell. I guess no Elvia Marte. Really just sort of a mixture of yes and no for this group. So it is interesting, and I don't totally know the reasoning behind it. My guess would be just a level of competition thing, but I don't know if you guys have other suggestions.
Austin Shenton also isn't on this roster, which is curious to me because, again, he's somebody who I think is a pretty recent draftee who they've moved pretty quickly and been really aggressive with. They must really like him. I'm sure for him, probably it's just having a spell, like getting a little rest. And bringing along some of these guys who didn't have anything resembling any kind of a season. So I think that's similar with Kelnick. I think part of it is the competition level. Like, we're not sending totally MLB-adjacent guys out other than, like, Jack Anderson and Wyatt Mills, who weren't invited to the alternate training site, so they could use the reps. But I think that they're leaving off a lot of those guys who are... just maybe giving them a rest before spring training.
Yeah. You pretty much hit the nail on the head. I've heard that it's mostly just they rode these guys really hard at the alternate site for 2 months. You know, there were days when these guys were getting 8, 9, 10 at-bats against upper-tier competition. And, you know, they were getting in workouts. And it was a grind down there. So more than anything, it's just... getting them a break. There's really nothing to like read into it about it. Almost all these guys are just getting a break.
So makes sense. Yeah. All right. Well, that is, I think, where we're going to call it for this episode. Hopefully we'll be able to get some info on the league. It starts, I believe, in a few days here, October 1st, if I'm not mistaken, actually. So tomorrow, we'll.
I actually have the thing up with the little. I can tell you exactly when it starts.
Yes, I believe.
It does start October 1st, and it will run through Sunday, November 11th. And they'll play actual games Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, at either Peoria or Surprise. Mondays and Thursdays will be camp days, and Sundays will be off. So,
yeah. So they are not allowing fans in, but if you're an intrepid Arizonan with a mask and also binoculars and some climbing equipment.
I'm trying to think of what the setup is like. I don't think Peoria is at all amenable to...
Peering in.
No.
Angels in the outfield style? Yeah.
Yeah, because the outfield is, there's a berm beyond it, and then it's gated, and it's like, it's built up, and then there's like a walkway under it, so I don't even think if you like climb the fence.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is like, it's like a ground level field. Like, some of them, like the Arizona,
Yeah, actually, what was it? Surprise is dipped down a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's set in. So if you, I'm trying to think about how that one is laid out. I think that one, there might be a possibility to go stand at a gate and be able to catch a little bit of it.
Also, if you have a blimp.
Also a blimp. It's true. If you're in Goodyear.
But no drones.
Yeah. Right? No drones. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, you know, New Mexico's big on the hot air balloon thing. You could pop over there, grab one.
Oh, you don't know. Don't use pop over there with a hot air balloon.
Well, no, fair point. Fair point.
Arizona has a lot of hot air balloons. What are you
talking
about?
Yeah, but you don't want to pop anywhere.
Well, no, you don't. But I mean, I'm saying if you want a hot air balloon, like, you don't have to go to New Mexico for it. Arizona has plenty.
All right. Well, I think we've given you plenty of legal legal opportunities.
Where are we at? This is exactly where it goes off the rails every time.
When they play this episode in court, you're welcome. We regret nothing. I will talk to you all soon. And until next time, go Mariners.
Bye.